Music Respawn. I'm talking with Tom Salto, who's here in the studio, which is really a nice change rather than Skype. It's great to have a chance to talk to you.
Good to be here.
You know, you have had such a busy time lately. And first of all, I want to congratulate you on your ASCAP Award for Best Game Music for this year for Killer Instinct Season 3. That's a huge deal. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, Clayton and I were really thrilled.
It, you know, what's interesting about it, the four nominees, you were up against the team from Blizzard who did Overwatch, Mike Salvatore and his gang at Bungie for Rise of Iron, and then John Robert Metz, an independent composer who created this score for Fossil Echo. And I think what's so cool about it is it's kind of a microcosm of what's going on with game soundtracks these days.
Yeah, no, it's a testament to the industry, how much it's evolved and the stylistic differences and the creativity that's out there. It's just such an expansive creative palette that's going on, and I'm really excited to be part of it.
Yeah, and it's a much more level playing field, I think, now, too, because, you know, you and Celldweller and then John Robert have, like, just as much of a shot at it as a great big team of composers.
Yeah, and I think that's also a testament to the industry and to how it's recognized. You know, you don't need to be on that super AAA budget with millions of dollars behind it to actually be recognized for the creative merit of something. And I think that's fantastic. That's really great to see.
I think what's so cool right now is that music in games is not like just this sort of afterthought or a lesser class of music. It's really its own thing right now. And I think probably you feel that way too.
Absolutely. You know, it has evolved to such a point where game companies put so much money and resources into it to allow the composers to really create world-class scores that will stand on their own against any film and perhaps over exceeding them. You know, games can have hours of music in them, and they put so much passion and resources into it. Now you listen to game music and it's truly incredible, and it's been world recognized as far as awards and BAFTAs and Grammys and all those things as well. So it's just really gratifying to see how far it's come.
Yeah, and it makes sense because so many players spend so many more hours listening to music in a game rather than in a film or on a TV show. And so they really get lost in it, too. So it has to be good.
Absolutely. In fact, one other thing now that I have teenagers, you know, it's really interesting to see how game music has become so much a part of the fabric of their lives that oftentimes they'll put game music on in the background while they're playing another game. Now, as long as it's not one of my games, but you know what I'm saying? That they'll actually put that game music on, and it's like it just puts them in that mood, or sometimes they'll just put it on in the background, you know, and just listen to it. Or so it just shows you a lot of how far it's come.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I really want to dig in and talk about your music for Killer Instinct 3 because it's so much fun. I just really got into it, and I'm not surprised that it's been doing so well on the charts in iTunes because it's like a lot of soundtracks. You can listen to it away from the game, and it still is just this, you know, rocking out really amazing soundtrack. So how did you get hooked up to do that project?
All right. Well, the backstory to that is Mick Gordon was working on Killer Instinct for 2 seasons, and he's amazing. He's done an incredible job with it. And for season 3, he did step away from the project, and he was talking with Microsoft, and they were he came up with the idea of suggesting that I work on it. I've known him before, and so he recommended me, and I gave him a call, and I thanked him very much. And then I said, "You're crazy because this is so amazing. I don't know, you know, how am I supposed to step into this and take it keep it going?" So anyway, I thought a lot about it. I thought about, you know, the game has such an avid fan base, and the music is such an important part. I mean, the music is like what defines the characters as much as the characters themselves. So I thought, you know what? Instead of me just approaching this like just as a composer would approach it, how about I put on the artist hat and kind of go back to the Atlas Plug persona and then team up with another hugely recognized artist, Cell Dweller, Clayton, who happened to be a friend of mine. So I gave him a call. I said, hey, would you be interested in doing a collaboration with me as Atlas Plug, and we could be Cell Dweller versus Atlas Plug doing Killer Instinct Season 3? He's like, hell yeah. So that's how it started, and we pitched the idea to Microsoft and did a little demo, and the rest is history.
It's a great history to kind of dig into, too. So how much did listening to Mix music influence where you were going to take the music?
Well, it was a great education, and not only just listening to the final product, but also having a chance to look at under the hood what was happening, because that's really where Killer Instinct music becomes what it is. It is divided into all these small pieces that get reassembled based on the state of the game, based on the fight. So you have all these various states, you know, normal state, combo state, ultra combos, low health, you know, on and on. And what you have to do is compose the music in such a way that it can be split up into all these components, and then the middleware, the game engine, will go and pull from those pieces and assemble it in a way that should sound like it was meant to happen that way. And that's always the magic of game music. If you can pull that off, that's when it works.
Yeah, I love the video of you and Cell Dweller kind of getting down to the nuts and bolts, the kind of granular level of the music for Idol, and picking it apart and just starting with all these different sounds that you were going to layer over it. And it must be so much fun to have a gigantic, like, box of crayons to play in with all those different sounds.
It's very interesting that you use that comparison to a box of crayons, because I like to refer to that. You know, when it comes to creativity and it comes to that blank slate, you know, my box of crayons has gotten really big from when I started, you know, right out of high school, right? And what I found, counterintuitively, is that the bigger the box of crayons, sometimes the harder it is to get creating, because you're deciding between all of these, you know, shades of red and all these millions of colors that you have. So what was interesting about Idol, for example, and for every Killer Instinct character, is that immediately the first thing that we wanted to do is establish a set boundary, creative boundary, for every character. So, for example, Idol, it had to be 80s inspired synthesizers, like the horror movies, like The Thing and all that kind of stuff. It had to be no guitars whatsoever.
Why was that? I'm really curious about that.
Well, I think because it was one way of distinguishing it amongst many of the other characters. You know, when you listen to a lot of Killer Instinct music, even mixed stuff, guitars usually plays a very strong part. It has a very strong personality. So this would really force us to find other creative ways to get that meat, you know, that creative adrenaline stuff in the beef of the music. And it forced us to get it from synthetic sources, sometimes through distortion, sometimes just through density. And it yielded a very unique, custom, recognizable sound immediately.
And that's a really cool thing about the game, too, is that each one of these characters has a really distinct personality and this backstory that they, like, bring with them, which is so, so cool. So with Idol, how did you kind of break it down to all of those different elements?
So this was fun. Idol was the only character where Clayton and I actually worked together in the same space. In fact, if you look at the video on YouTube, we made a bit of a joke of that because normally we're always Skyping each other, and he was over in Detroit and I'm over in Connecticut, and you know we are using the computers and file sharing to get stuff back and forth. So this one, we decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to fly out to his studio and work. So we had a little fun with that in that video, how it made it look like I wasn't there, and then I just walked in the room, and it's like, what? You know, he stares at the camera. Anyway, so long story short, what we really did is, like, day one, we just I got a bunch of synths. He had some amazing new cool retro synths there, and I just spent hours and hours and hours, just like a kid in a candy store, kind of just going through these different sounds and collecting ideas and riffs and phrases and notes and whatever, picking a tempo and, you know, shooting them over to him on his computer and then saying, hey, what do you think of this? And then, you know, we go kind of back and forth and we just start assembling all these cool little segments and ideas. And we started to see some kind of personality develop there. And that's kind of how it began.
That's so cool. And then it looked like you had video from the studio, too, to watch, like, the battles and the way he moves and his, like, combo moves and that kind of thing. And so that must have been a big help when you were kind of deciding.
Well, what's interesting is that we usually don't have the actual footage of that character to do the music to. Sometimes halfway through the process, they'll give us a capture. But generally speaking, we knew the formula. I mean, regardless of who the character is, we know the intensities, the emotions, the feelings, the levels that it has to get to and cover. So in that case, we were able to do it without looking at the character. What they would do often is to send us like a concept art or a still shot of what he looked like. So like, oh, look, the two heads and like, ooh, okay, this gives me an idea. But when it comes to specific moves, they would actually a lot of times do it to the music. So for example, when it got into what they call the ultra combo, which is a very customized move done to a set rhythm, I would say, they would actually ask us to create that specific rhythm, and then they would score the ultra combo to that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I was going to ask you how much tempo was a factor of that, because
yeah,
a lot of these characters, they're massive.
Yeah.
And they don't necessarily move super quickly. You know, it's
right.
Not like Link in Super Smash Brothers or something where
right.
He's like very twisty and fast and speedy.
Well, that's a great great observation. And I think the concept art would really help. You know, we get a sense. And also the audio director, he would really give us a good backstory and give us good information. You know, this is a big brooding, you know, character and this and that. And it's, you know, he's does this and his superpower is this. And in other words, we would really kind of have an idea of what we're going for. And we can kind of just put that into the music from the ground up.
Yeah, that's so cool. And tell me a little bit about Mira, because she's not one of these legacy characters from the two earlier seasons. She's brand new, and she sounds super badass, really.
Yeah. No, thank you. You know, Mira is very funny. We also did we had a little fun with that on that video that we put together in the behind the scenes. Mira was described to us as this crazy Russian vampire underground cathedral chick, and so, you know, putting that into music was a challenge, but exciting to do. And so, you know, the way I like to approach music and emotion and feelings is really break it apart and almost quite literal with certain things. You know, what can we do for the vampire aspect? What can we do for the female aspect? What we can do the Russian aspect? You know, and find instruments and melodies that will cover all those different things. And when you, that would also work together. And that's how Mira was basically assembled, the whole creative concept for that musically.
And what's so cool about it is they don't feel like separate elements when you're listening to the whole track. You've got that gorgeous soprano and then the strings and the organ and the guitars. And it's just, yeah, it's such a cool mix of everything. It's really neat.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a little nerve-wracking at the beginning because, like, are we going to be able to pull this off and also have it be a Killer Instinct sounding track at the same time? You know?
Well, who did you have to kind of consult and make sure that there was enough, like,
oh, well, the audio director is always, he's the final decision, you know, and then he played for the team. So we had to make sure it passed his approval when it comes to that kind of stuff. But by that time, I think we pretty much had a good idea of what had to be done.
Yeah, I suppose if you live in that world long enough, you kind of like, it gets to be part of your, I don't know, not your DNA exactly, but it definitely is in your consciousness, and so you kind of know.
How does this stand up to the other character? Does it feel just as strong in a different way?
Yeah. And also, I was just like blown away that the Arbiter is a character too. And I think it's so cool because I'd love to talk with you about your music for the Halo, I guess not sequels exactly, but the music you've done for Halo recently. Mm-hmm. But that was such a cool fusion of Killer Instinct plus Halo.
Wow. Yeah, the coincidence of that was incredible because I had just come off of working on Halo, The Fall of Reach. And you know, and I had worked on, I think, about five or six Halo titles to this point. And so I knew very well the DNA of what made Halo music, and I know a lot of the themes and motifs and everything. So having the chance to then pull from that, which I was working on, and then Killer Instinct, and put them together where the two worlds collide, that was like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Now how are we going to Killer Instinctize Arbiter, you know? This should be interesting.
Way you snuck the monks theme in there. It's super subtle, but it just totally works.
I know. I just have a thing for that, right? I always have to. That's, I guess that goes to the fan side of me with the Halo music, you know, and I always try to hide little Easter eggs, so to speak, in the music.
Well, you know, the Halo music and the Halo fan base have such a, it's such a dedicated following. And I mean, you're a Halo fan.
Yeah.
You'd mentioned that hearing the music for Combat Evolved was what got you into the industry in the first place.
It was indeed.
So when you got that first Halo gig, was it a little bit like, be careful what you wish for? Cause...
Well, you know, I think I was eased into it creatively. I mean, it was really hard to put into words how fulfilling it was when I was asked to be part of the team to work on Halo. I mean, that was literally a dream come true for me. So dropping the phone and then, you know, getting up off the floor. And after that, you know, getting into that was really great because the first thing that I worked on with Halo wasn't an original score. It was recreating the original from 2001, Marty and Michael's music, right? Note for note recreations of it. And talk about an education, you know, now we've gone through the entire score, every little detail, every sound, recreating that, enhancing it, bringing it up to date with today's sounds and technology and new recordings of everything. And, you know, so that by the time I got through doing Combat Evolved and then Halo 2 Anniversary, I had already recreated, you know, worked on recreating two scores. So then it was like, oh, how great would it be to work on an original score? And I think the first original was Spartan Assault, mm-hmm. which was Be Careful What You Wish For. Yeah, you're going to work on your first original Halo score, but with a few differences. One, it's not going to be a first-person shooter. It's going to be a top-down twin-stick shooter, and it's action all the time.
Right.
So I'm like, and it's on a mobile mm-hmm. device. I'm like, you know, it's like, wait, that's not Halo, though. You can't, it's like, well, we have to find out how to make it sound like Halo and still go into that. And I can tell you there was many, many obstacles and hurdles creatively and technically to make it so that you can put on the headphones, close your eyes and say, yes, I'm in the Halo universe, but in a totally different way. And I definitely could say there was a few sleepless nights of worrying along that creative process. Definitely be careful what you wish for scenario. But in the end, I think it came out really, I was happy with the result. And more importantly, I think the fans were.
What's fun about it for me to listen to is to hear those tiny, tiny little references, little echoes of the original music that Mike and Marty wrote, and you like totally nailed it with the percussion and the chorus, and because that's, I think, for me, kind of the bedrock. And these really just, they're simple, but the melodies are like really powerful. So
thank you so much. I mean, that's just a testament to how great their music was in the beginning that inspired me, you know, to get into video game music in the first place, coming from the record industry. So I had spent a lot of time listening to it. And then after doing two, you know, recreations of their scores, I kind of had it under my belt. I kind of knew right away what was a Halo chord or melody and what was not. What was that sound? And, you know, I have a habit of, I like to reverse engineer music. Mm-hmm. So I listen to it, I break it apart into its components like an explosion diagram. And then I can kind of put original stuff in there and reassemble it in the same way. And it kind of sounds like Halo. I don't know why, but it does. And that's kind of the approach that I took with it. And, you know, I think there had its moments, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's a big responsibility because, like we said, you know, the fan base, got to be Halo, got to sound like Halo.
Yeah.
So the other challenge that you had with the Spartan games was not being able to use all live instruments. It had to be a kind of a hybrid. So how did you decide what was going to be live musicians and what was going to be?
Yeah. You know, I've worked on a scope of projects, you know, with varying budgets and varying resources, you know. So I always prioritize, say, well, what do we have to work with, you know? And, okay, so with these resources, what's the highest priority if we are going to spend it in live musicians, you know, live recordings? So at the end of the day, I prioritize the choir.
Mm, yeah, because that's like a fundamental thing.
I feel that was the most important thing. And then if there was going to be any additional resources available, we could put that into some orchestral sweetening. And that was generally the approach that we took. And, you know, making sure that the things that are live do stand out. You know, you want to make sure that it was worth doing it, you know. So if you're going to go with a live choir, then it gives you a chance to really put it out in the open, you know, and expose and show how beautiful it is and the realism, the human factor. And so, you know, when you listen to that menu music, you know, that main theme, I think that's where it really shined.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And it's, I don't know, maybe this might be a kind of a tough question to answer, but you've done both. You've done music for an already established kind of franchise and stuff where you just get to strike off on your own. Do you like doing one of those better than the other, or do they each have their own interesting challenges?
Yeah, I mean, it's not as cool as an answer to say they both have their own interesting challenges, but I think that is accurate to say. There's good and bad, you know. The good about working on an established franchise is that it removes a lot of the guesswork. It's like, well, I know what is established. This is what I'm going for. That's the formula. I'm going for that. The challenge with that is, okay, can I actually maintain that, improve upon it, whatever? Can I own that? Because that's really, when it comes to creativity, even if I try to copy something, if I'm going to be really sincere creatively, it has to come from me. So I have to really study it. It's just like an actor. Some of the greatest actors are the ones that transform themselves. You know, it's like you don't recognize that person anymore. They're someone else. There's some actors that they play the same role in every movie. Yep. You know, it does. Oh, like he's the same guy. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure we could both think of some actors like that. So, but you know, so when it comes to an established franchise, that's where I can't just be Tom. I have to become that other character musically. So that takes a lot more study and experimentation to make that your own. So that when you create. Sincerely, it comes across in the same way, just like acting.
Right, yeah.
And then, you know, starting from scratch has its advantages and its disadvantages. I'm starting from scratch. Oh, boy. Can I do anything that's actually good? It's scary to do something original and new, mm-hmm. you know? But the good factor is that, well, you know, hey, you can do something that's original and new and make your own identity out of that. And you know, I think you need to do that to establish yourself in a career. I mean, fortunately, I was able to do that earlier on when I was doing the early Ghost Recon games, Advanced Warfighter, and a lot of the Tom Clancy titles. You know, I kind of developed this sound that people refer to, and I was able to kind of help launch me into further expanding.
Yeah, that's great. But what's cool is you haven't just only been pigeonholed either, because you've had the freedom to go off and do really different sounding stuff. Like Red Steel is so interesting to listen to because it's got that just, you know, like little hint of Asian music, which is, I don't know, I think that's really cool.
No, thank you. It's always scary because in a way I never wanted to be pigeonholed. You know, I always wanted to be able to say, yeah, you won't recognize it's me. It's funny when you make a career out of composing, sometimes that works against you. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes good to be pigeonholed as long as it's a hole that you want to base your career on, you know? So, you know, for me though, I have so many things that I enjoy doing it. Part of the joy for me does come from the variety. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a way it can, you know, the jack of all trades thing, you know, sometimes it can work against you to some degree, but I wouldn't trade it. I really do enjoy jumping across boundaries creatively and things that you would not recognize, whether you know, look at the Prince of Persia score versus Red Steel 1 versus Red Steel 2 mm-hmm. versus, you know, Ghost Recons versus Hawks versus Need for Speed versus Halo, you know, I do kind of jump around quite a bit and versus Just Dance, you know, all those songs and things like that. So it's fun. It is fun, but, Yeah, it has its ups and downs.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, and it must be a real challenge to balance everything too, and make sure that you're hitting deadlines.
Yeah.
And getting those milestones. And
sure, sure. You know, one last thing that, you know, any composers that are out there listening to this, the one of the challenges about doing so many things is that people don't know what to hire you for.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, he's doing that. I guess he couldn't be good at doing this. Sometimes they feel more secure hiring you to do the same thing that you did the last time. But that would be death to me creatively. I mean, oh my God. It's like, oh, I have to do another one of the same things over and over and over again. So just something to be aware of, I think, to anyone wanting to do a career of that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of people launching their careers, you give so much back to the community. You're on the board of the Game Audio Network Guild. You've done a lot of things for the community. In Connecticut especially, you were at a game jam in Stamford in January, and we're going to be together at the Ridgefield Library's RidgeCon on August 11th. And I think it's really neat that you're encouraging younger composers and just kind of, you know, welcoming people who want to be part of that community with open arms.
Yeah, I mean, you need to give back. It's important. It feeds you. I mean, it just gives me so much satisfaction to see people, young up-and-comers become inspired, those wide open eyes of possibility. That was me. And I'm like, well, I want to be that person that I wish I knew, you know, back when I was starting out. You know, I want to be that person that I wish I heard talk. I want to be that person. So that's my way of just giving back and contributing to the ecosystem. And you know, I'm a strong believer in what you put out there, it comes back to you.
Well, and what's so nice to hear you talk about it is it's so much more optimistic than a lot of times when people say, well, it's a tough industry to break into and
yeah,
it's, you know, you got to pay your dues and a lot of it's not fun. And I'm sure that part of it is true too. But
yes,
on the other hand, if what you love to do is composing music, then this is a great outlet for that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, without doubt. I mean, if you were to call me up and say, hey, you know, my nephew or my niece was interested in game, could he come over to your studio and maybe talk a little bit? You know, the first thing I'm going to try to do is just talk them out of it. I'm going to spend 90% of the talking them out of it, because I know that if they still want to do it after I tried to talk them out of it, then they have a chance.
Yeah. Because it is tough. I mean, it's...
Yes.
But still, it sounds like you've really had such a great career. And I know you've got projects in the works still, so we'll have more great stuff to listen to. But man, Tom, it's been so much fun to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.